Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.
Welcome to the Sonic Screwcast. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to all of time and space, or maybe Bridgerton. I'm John.
And I'm Alicia, and this is our coverage of the BBC and Disney Plus series Doctor Who.
In this episode, we'll be discussing Season 1, Episode 7, titled Rogue.
And as much as we enjoy discussing this show amongst ourselves, we also want to hear from you. So please send any thoughts about the show or our coverage of the show to TARDIS@thelorehounds.com or visit the website thelorehounds.com/contact, and there you'll find a contact form and also a built-in voicemail feature. Please also check out our Discord server, where we have a fun and welcoming community with a dedicated channel for Whovians. You'll find that link in the show notes below.
And please consider subscribing to our Supercaster Patreon for as little as $3 a month. You get ad-free episodes and much more. Subscribing is a great way to help us make more timey-wimey podcasts. Spoiler warning, everyone. We're going to talk about everything Doctor Who, apparently things that were not considered canon prior to this episode. So anything that the BBC has ever put out about Doctor Who.
We might spoil it.
Yep. All right, so, Alicia.
I was going to ask, what did you think of this episode?
After you. We're very polite in this Bridgerton episode. I thought it was great. This was the first episode, I think, that didn't improve on rewatch because it was good from the beginning.
Okay.
You know, like, not that it's a bad episode. I'm just like, it wasn't like a think piece, this one. This was more of a just go have fun. Which we need an episode like that, right? Especially after 73 Yards and Dot and Bubble. I think those were two like really heavy think piece Doctor Who episodes.
Right. I mean, this one was, pulled on the heartstrings a lot.
Absolutely. But like you were right there in the moment, right? There wasn't really a deeper layer to that.
Right. No, it wasn't a philosophical one. It was a plot driven one.
Right, right. Which I think that's a genre of Doctor Who, that's a subgenre of Doctor Who that we haven't seen much of this season. So I'm glad that we're doing it now.
Right.
So yeah, I thought it was really fun. I don't watch Bridgerton. I know you do. So I'm excited to hear your thoughts. I do like a fun, you know, Victorian style ball, but yeah, I don't specifically watch Bridgerton. But it seemed like they captured it. I loved watching Ruby and the Doctor have an amazing time. Like, they were just having a blast for most of this. And I really loved Jonathan Groff in this. I thought he was an excellent, excellent right. love interest for the Doctor. Mm-hmm. I like him in general. And seeing him on Doctor Who, it fit really well. When they first showed him, I was worried. I was like, are they just recreating Jack Harkness? And now I'm like, yeah, but it's good. So it's okay.
It's different.
Yeah, it is different. It is different. I think he's honestly less flirty, right? Because the Doctor is the one who has to pull him out.
Right. He's more, the Doctor's more the Jack Harkness in this situation.
right. Jack is trying to flirt with everybody. The Doctor is the one being like, oh, a handsome man. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I loved seeing this different Doctor. You know, I saw a criticism on Reddit this season before this episode where they said, you know, I feel like RTD only writes one Doctor and it's up to the actor to make them different. Hmm. Whereas Moffat distinguishes his Doctors really well.
Okay.
And I don't agree with that. And I think this episode proves that this Doctor, you know, I'm not just because he's gay, but because he's willing to put himself out there.
Right.
Is much different than any other Doctor. Like, the 10th Doctor can't say I love you to Rose. Can't, mm-hmm. you know, put his feelings out there. This one's like, yeah, let's go an adventure together. And you're amazing. And we're great together. And I love that. You know, that's a new tone for the Doctor that I don't think we've seen before.
Yeah, we've talked previously about, you know, this bi-generation thing and whether it is to give this Doctor, as Davies, I think, is the one who said, time to recover from the past trauma. Well, we see in this episode, mm-hmm. the Doctor is still carrying this trauma and it's always going to carry this trauma. But I think what this gave him was time to get in touch with himself more. Time to...
Yeah, and people are talking about the crying on Reddit. You know, he's crying a lot, this Doctor. Like, every episode he's crying. And
so?
No, I know.
No, I think that the
answer to that is this Doctor is allowing himself to feel in the moment, right. whereas previous incarnations would have bottled it up until it mm-hmm. exploded.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
As the Time Lord victorious.
Yes. We have a more emotionally healthy Doctor here.
Yeah, but a Doctor who still has the darkness that we mm-hmm. saw in early Absolutely. New Who, in original New Who.
Yeah, this, that comes out this episode.
I think the 9th Doctor would have been proud to hear, that's a long time to suffer, 600 years or whatever it was. I think back to the 9th Doctor in the Dalek episode saying, why don't you just kill yourself? And this darkness that's within the Doctor has not gone away, we see in this episode. It's just, it's lesser, but it's still part of him.
Right.
Anyway, what'd you think?
This one felt like it was really made for me. I am a fan of Bridgerton, although I have to be honest, I love Bridgerton, but I... first and foremost, love Jane Austen and love like actual 19th century literature and, you know, that kind of English society literature that's really more about figuring out how to be who you are in a world that tells you how to be. So I took a little bit of exception that this episode, they said the name Bridgerton three times and they didn't mention Jane Austen once, even though they did name one of the characters Emily Beckett, which was a clear... Elizabeth Bennet nod, which is the main character of Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, okay. By the way, this Bridgerton focus, mm-hmm. I want to come back to that after your hot takes, because I think that there's a fan theory that's going around that points to why they focused on Bridgerton.
Oh, wait, go for it. What is it?
All right. So every episode this season has had a genre, right? It's been horror and then, you know, just straight up sci-fi with, what I was trying to say, Dot and Bubble, I would say,
right.
Or maybe dystopian. Boom is this war movie. This one is romance. You had the biopic with the Beatles one.
Right.
And I think that people are saying, what if Susan Twist is one of the pantheon that's like the storyteller?
Yeah.
And Susan Twist is just trapping them in stories. And that's why she shows up all the time.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, because we see her this time as the painting Millie notices, and she's like, and then she asks her friend the Duchess, and she's like, yeah, it's my mother-in-law. Her eyes are always following me, always watching me.
Yeah, so what if she's a self-insert of one of the Pantheon?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And they're all within these stories, right? And and so that's why it would make sense to me, like, oh, they're like Bridgerton, because it's signaling like this is a TV show.
Right.
This is a TV show inside a TV show.
Right. No, that's that's a good point. Yeah. It did feel I like the idea of this bigger connection. It did feel like the most Doctor Who episode yet this season. Like the most, like if someone were to ask me independently of watching this season, what is Doctor Who? What's it like? I would point to an episode like this one as an example.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I hadn't thought about that before, but I think I'm with you.
I thought it had one of the best cold opens of the season. It set the story and, you know, it was intriguing and exciting and funny and all at the same time. And we see our first murder. Like, you are wicked. It would be so much more fun to be you.
Yeah, I really liked that turn.
Yeah.
That was a good introduction.
I know some people have been complaining about that Nchuti and Millie haven't gotten enough screen time together yet this season, but I do love what I do get. I think that their chemistry is so good. But it was also great to see their chemistry with the other characters, you know, Nchuti with Jonathan Groff and Millie with Indira Varma as the Countess. Mm-hmm. So it was a really great cast this episode. And also the writing staff was top. So Kate Herron, who's best known for being like the brain behind season one of Loki, she was one of the writers with Bryony Redman. And yeah, so really a lot of top talent going into this episode.
Yeah, yeah. This is top tier Who. I think so. I think you're right. You, of course, made the mistake of going on IMDb and checking out the audience ratings. But we learned from The Acolyte you can't really focus on those.
Well, I was like, oh, look at the one-star reviews. We know what that's about. But then I went to look at The Acolyte. My God. This is really the most review-bomb thing I've ever seen. Oh.
Yeah, well, The Acolyte has gotten me to read two High Republic books in the last week. Yeah, so
there you go. Oh, wait, two?
Yeah, I finished another one.
What's the other one?
Path of Deceit.
Oh, cool. Wow.
I'm almost done with Battle of Jeddah,
too. Through them. All right, nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be an expert by the time we record our next podcast.
Awesome.
You've done something to me, Alicia, with Star Wars. Now I have to just power through. Shall we get to the whole shebang? The whole shindig? What's the word? That. We can't say okay because that's anachronistic and we're teaching all the shapeshifters how to use it. So would you like to tell me what the episode's about?
Sure. So I wrote a little summary. Okay. The Doctor and Ruby attend a ball in Bath in 1813, where the Doctor meets a mysterious bounty hunter named Rogue. When desiccated corpses start being discovered, Rogue believes that the Doctor, who is clearly, like Rogue, a man out of time, must be responsible. He believes him to be a Cholder, a member of a murderous, bird-like, shape-shifting race. Despite the Doctor's flirting, Rogue takes him back to his ship, about to transport him to an incinerator, when the Doctor uses Rogue's scanning equipment to reveal himself as a Time Lord, and thus not the murderer. Then he takes Rogue back to his TARDIS to show him what a proper ship looks like, and they nearly share a kiss, talking of traveling the galaxy together. Meanwhile, Ruby has befriended the Duchess of Pemberton, the party's hostess, and a spurned woman named Emily Beckett, who, by the midpoint of the episode, are both, unbeknownst to Ruby, being cosplayed by Childer. Because it turns out there are many Childer here who've come for the quote-unquote Bridgerton party and intend to drain and replace people of power first in England and then the world until they've cosplayed the planet to death. And it seems, while the Doctor was distracted by his own play acting and dancing with Rogue, the Childer playing Emily has gotten Ruby and taken her place. The Doctor reconfigures Rogue's transporter device, setting it to send the Childer to another dimension and traps them. But it's revealed that the real Ruby is still alive after using her psychic earrings to fight off Emily and then mimic her scent and mannerisms to pretend to be her. But now Ruby is stuck in the transporter trap with the Childer, so Rogue grabs the Doctor and kisses him, stealing the transporter activator at the same time, and then jumps into the transporter trap using his momentum to knock Ruby out and take her place. He presses the button, and as he disappears into that unknown dimension, he yells out, "Find me!" And the Doctor is left standing with Rogue's ring and no idea where to begin.
Okay, one nitpick for that ending sequence is, if you could just knock someone out of that ring, why aren't the Childer doing that to each other?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I thought that it might be like you have to take their place, but then I thought, why not just use the body? Because there was the Emily Childer was still there. Mm-hmm. Why not just like use her to knock Ruby out?
Right. Yeah, it was very confusing. Yeah. It was very confusing. I'm just going to wipe that away. I'm going to eat some cereal for that because this is Doctor Who, baby. Yeah. Or babes. Sorry, I'm trying to incorporate babes into my vocabulary.
Oh, yeah. Wait, did you load up the... I asked my British friend about saying babes because she was using it.
I'm going to load it up right now because that's exciting and I want to hear it. Yep, hold on. My technology is working about as well as the doctor's... it's the doctor's.
Sonic screwdriver after it's taken away.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
Okay, Ashley, so do British people say babes?
Yes, babes. Of course we do. We say it all the time.
Okay, babes.
Okay, thank you, babes.
Oh, my gosh. She would have fit in the Dot and Bubble episode.
Yes, she was putting on that persona.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, I love the babes thing. Yeah. We love it. I said to my wife, I said, I'm going to start saying babe. She goes, are you from England? And I was like, no. She goes, then don't say babe.
Babe. You have to say it like that, though. Babes.
Babes. I'm trying.
So I have a nitpick.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, this is also just eating cereal, Doctor Who. But okay, my brain, though, in the beginning, I love that he changes every episode now. Obviously has a nice, costume supply on the TARDIS. That makes sense. But does he also stock wigs or did he use sudden hair regeneration powers to create that ponytail?
Ooh, I think he stocks wigs.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that probably makes the most sense.
Do you know the do you wear wigs thing?
No, what's that? Oh, wait, that sounds familiar. What is it?
Okay, so I have to give you the background now. So at some point around the time of The Lord of the Rings, Elijah Wood signed up to do an interview, but secretly the interviewer was Dominic, what's his last name?
Mary?
Yeah, Mary or Pippin. One of them.
Pippin, yeah. The and one who was in Lost.
He put on a German accent.
Okay.
And he asked him about wigs. So here we go.
When will you wear wigs?
That's just the end of it, but he's like, "Vil you va vigs?" It's very funny. I would encourage everybody to look this up because Elijah Wood could not hold it together. But anyway, that's what I always think when we talk about wig watch.
So Elijah Wood knew it was him then, obviously.
No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't.
It was okay. Blind. It was audio only.
Okay.
And so this was just a big prank on Elijah Wood. He was like, why are you asking me about wigs? He asked him about four questions in a row about wearing wigs. Anyway, the point is, I think the doctor stocks wig.
Yes, this makes sense. Makes sense. I loved also Ruby calling out Lord Stilton. Although I don't believe that the Countess would find it delightful. She would, maybe a little bit. It depends. I think, yeah, anyone who enjoys Bridgerton is like, what else should I watch? Run out and watch both Sanditon and Gilded Age. And in Gilded Age, there's a real woman named Mamie Fish. I mean, sorry, a character in Gilded Age based on a real woman named Mamie Fish. And she is always the one who's like looking for the troublemakers and trying to stir stuff up, which is apparently the real woman's personality. So the Countess reminded me of her a bit.
Yeah, I did like there are clues early on that there's Childer there. Although I guess the Countess wasn't a Childer at that point.
Right. No,
never mind.
She was just a bitch in the beginning.
Fair enough. I was going to say you have notes about the flirting.
Which
I agree with you was very fun.
Yeah, I love he looks at the psychic paper. He's like, it says you're hot. Like, I'm hot or you're hot? Which just, yeah, I meant to look it up exactly how psychic paper is supposed to work again, because it's supposed to show them whatever they need to see at that moment, right?
I think you have to think what it is. Because the doctor needs to be able to say, like, I'm from this agency, right? Because he does that all the time. So I think you're projecting what you want it to say.
But it is often the case, it seems like people look at it and it doesn't say what the doctor expects it to say.
Yeah.
Like I can think of a few instances where people are like, it says that you're, oh, yes.
I think we're going to just wibbly wobbly that one.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think it works exactly how it's supposed to work in the particular episode. I think in this instance, it's supposed to be the doctor wants it to say whatever he said. I don't even remember. And instead it says his most prominent thought right now, which is you're hot.
Right. Okay. Either way, it makes sense. I mean, because then also if it's the other way, then it's like what Rogue needs to see is you're hot.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I was surprised that Disney let them kiss. Actually, after the first time when they got interrupted, I was like, oh, Disney's never going to let them do it. Because I guess I'm also burned by the way other stories have been treated. Like, for instance, in Wakanda Forever, I was very excited about a certain ship from the comics. And then we just got like a kiss on the head in the background. Like, what? And I made a comment in our Acolyte breakdown about how I didn't think that Disney would actually let them make the show too gay, or I can't remember the exact context. But then right after that, I watched this episode. It's like, well, I stand corrected. I'm sorry, Disney.
Well, and they've got Deadpool versus Wolverine this year, which seems like it's Deadpool. So I think it's a new Disney. It's a brave new Bob Iger.
Oh, well, I hope so, because, I mean, I liked the old Bob Iger, but the new Bob Iger is kind of sucked.
He hasn't
been the allied creatives that he used to be. Let's just say that.
Well, that's a shame. That's a shame. I will say I don't hate the decision to reduce the number of series for things like Marvel and Star Wars so that we have quality.
No, I understand that.
I think that's pretty good.
That's not my problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
But speaking of Disney, I had to laugh when there's the reveal of Rogue ship and he's like, now that's a ship. And in my brain, I thought, now that's a Disney budget.
Yeah. 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 It seems like the way it's working is that Disney gives them money to publish it, but it's still a BBC show. Like, they create it from beginning to end.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Like, you get it's kind of the best of both worlds because they get Disney budget, but they, you know, have creative freedom. I think that was an RTD decision.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So should we talk about the big reveal scene on Rogue ship?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jodie Whittaker, justice for Jodie.
I mean, first of all, it was kind of Rogue scanner is kind of shit if it picks up that he's a shapeshifter, but not two hearts. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and a shapeshifter, that's so, like, are we all shapeshifters because we grow from child to adult? Like, it's
right. It's vague.
It feels very vague.
Right. Yeah. That's. I guess I was eating cereal for that, but I did like just the power of the moment and just showing all these different faces. It was a good tease about regeneration for new viewers because they haven't explained that aspect yet to people who just started watching.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a callback for old. It was funny. Tennant was in there twice because, of course, he plays two different doctors.
Of course. You gotta. And
we had the fugitive doctor and the war doctor and the one that everyone's talking about, Richard E. Grant, as the doctor from a previously considered non-canonic short animated series, Scream of the Shalka.
Mm-hmm. Which RTD had previously said he did not like, and which is why he didn't consider it canon.
I mean, he seems like he's coming around on a lot of things. Yeah.
That's pretty funny. I mean, maybe he's just like, well, I don't care about the story, but the doctor, yeah, he's good. He's good. Well, it's interesting, too, because he was number 9
right.
in that. He was right. called the 9th Doctor, and then RTD was like, no, this is the 9th Doctor. And he points to Christopher Eccleston, and Christopher Eccleston's like, fuck this, I want to leave.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's super interesting. Super interesting coming in.
Wasn't the War Doctor kind of also considered that? Wait, does the War Doctor get a number? Fugitive Doctor doesn't get a number. So
War Doctor doesn't get a number either.
Right. So the numbering's already all wonky. Someone called out that Clara once said to the 11th Doctor, I've seen your faces all 11, but I guess I'm writing that off as the fact that Clara saw what he had in his mind. You know, those are the faces he knew about.
Well, that and when she says that, he right away says, no, there's another one that I don't think about. And then the War Doctor right. walks in.
Okay, that's true. Okay.
That's how they introduced John Hurt as the Doctor. Don't you remember they had that big like overlay? They're like introducing John Hurt
right.
as the Doctor.
No, I remember all the, yeah, I remember the War Doctor thing and the promo around it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it seems like he's leaning into this. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does with this whole multiverse of doctors, kind of, especially considering the Childer in this gets sent to a quote unquote alternate dimension.
Also, RTD, before Paul McGann gets too old, can we please give him his own like season of something or a movie? I feel like we were robbed of a Paul McGann doctor.
Who's Paul McGann?
He's the 8th Doctor.
Oh, okay.
I want more 8th Doctor.
Okay, I haven't watched that movie. I need to watch that movie.
He has such a charisma, and it was restricted to the movie, and the movie was supposed to launch the American-made series, and then the American-made series didn't happen.
Right.
But it's really weird, because at one point they were almost not going to consider the 8th Doctor canon when they were developing the new series, because it was a movie, it was a standalone movie. But also they had Sylvester McCoy, the 7th Doctor, regenerate into Paul McGann at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
So it's kind of weird to not consider that canon.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, enough Doctor Who politic.
All right, I'm putting that movie, bumping it up my list. I got to watch that one finally.
Oh, I haven't even watched it yet. Maybe we could add that to a watch list. Maybe we could do this post-season. We could do like a special podcast about it.
Yeah, do like a movie night for subscribers, something like
that.
That'd
be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I noticed, by the way, that Rogue said he has a new boss. So I'm thinking it's probably going to turn out to be somebody bad, although I'm kind of on their side, the fact that they're like, hey, you better double check your bounties before you kill them.
Yeah, right? That's, I wonder if the boss is either Jack Harkness or Richard E. Grant. Richard E. Grant was also the Great Intelligence.
Okay.
Like, he was a previous Doctor Who villain.
But, I mean, how many actors have played more than one role in Doctor Who?
True, but my question is, like, they've explained Peter Capaldi away, right? Like they've explained that with like, oh, this face was to remind me to be kind or whatever it was, to save people as much as I can. And I don't know. Do you know that David Tennant was in Scream of the Shulka? I was just clicking on it to get to Richard E. Grant.
Oh, no.
That's funny. He was uncredited.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I forgot when the Grid Intelligence was. Was that?
Was
that 11th Doctor? I don't remember.
I am not going to be able to place things on a timeline.
There's so many episodes that it just blends together after a while.
Absolutely.
But anyway, I just think it would be really interesting to see them explain that too. Be like, maybe the Great Intelligence was a rogue doctor.
Yeah, could be. By the way, speaking of multiversal possibilities, so when Nshuti Gatwa sang the Willy Wonka song as he was walking into the TARDIS, mm-hmm. I think that was a reference to apparently the way that Gatwa got the part is he said to his agent, like, I want to do something really different. I want to be either Willy Wonka or Doctor Who. And then, and then they found out Doctor Who was casting, and here we are.
That's really funny. That's really funny. Willy Wonka is definitely a Time Lord. Can we just put that out there?
Absolutely. It's canon. It is known.
it is known. It is known. We're really crossing the fandoms here.
Yeah, well, it's going to be one big massive crossover one day. I'm sure of it, actually.
It's going to be like Fortnite, but for TV.
Right. Or what is that, Kingdom of Hearts, the Disney one?
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts. Yeah. Kingdom Hearts?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that was like my whole childhood. That was great. Yeah. Oh, man. In fact, I think Brandon and I might cover it on Lorehound Play at some point.
I think I was a little too old when it became popular. Like, I never really knew people who played it.
Oh, I was like 10 or 12 years old when it came out. I was perfect age for it. It's a Final Fantasy spinoff, but you go through all the Disney worlds because, I don't know, somebody made a weird marketing deal that I don't think would happen today.
Yeah, it's unbelievable because Disney is like the toughest on that.
Mm-hmm. But they were like, yeah, go ahead, make one where you fly to different planets that are our worlds.
But now Disney has stakes in, you know, Doctor Who, Marvel, Star Wars, Planet of the Apes. Like, we could get something really going here.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You had asked me, do you think that we'll get Marvelized, like Marvel Comics, Doctor Who comics? And they did announce that they're doing Dark Horse comics still.
Okay.
But they are about to put out their first issue, I think, on the 15th Doctor, but it's going to be Dark Horse.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's just, I mean, I was just being selfish because I have Marvel Unlimited.
Right. I've had that from time to time, but then I don't use it enough, and so I had to cancel it.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, because Disney owns so much now, it's actually proven quite a good deal.
Yeah. If you're reading comics, it's a great deal. It's not an ad. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Yeah, no, we don't get a... And if Marvel wants to give me some free unlimited, that's great.
I've been trying to do joke ads lately, like that, because we don't do host read ads on this podcast for various reasons, but I've been trying to do joke ads. We were talking about Otto's beard in House of the Dragon on the podcast with Maester Anthony, and I said something about Manscaped. Anyway... Speaking of the word okay that I keep repeating.
Right. So that was a funny, because we didn't know when Emily said this, we didn't know yet that she was a children. She's like, I know the word okay. So I had to look this up, and okay was the first time it's in publishing. It was very much an American word. It means like all correct.
Yeah. It's like all correct. It's like a joke, right? Because it's misspelled.
Right. And, It was first published as OK in March 23rd, 1839 in the Boston Morning Post. So this is like 26 years earlier in a different country. So it's a bit anachronistic, but it could be one of those things like the doctor made the joke about accidentally inventing asphalt.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, I like the OK thing, and you know, if you're Australian, it's archai. Yeah. I could listen to Australian people say O vowels all day. I think it's great. You guys keep doing what you're doing.
I love an Australian accent.
Arnar. Go on.
Speaking of what people normally say, I liked the callback where Rogue says run and Doctor says, I'm normally the one who says that.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. Run for your life. That's an earworm for me, is when the Night Doctor goes, "Hi, I'm the Doctor. Run for your life."
Yeah, was that how we first met Rose?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the dolls, you know.
Yeah.
The mannequins.
With the Autons.
Yeah. Autons, right.
Which, by the way, do you know that that's a classic Who villain, the Autons?
I found out later. I didn't when I watched the episode.
Because I was watching the Third Doctor's run, and I was like, wait a minute.
Right.
I know these Autons.
Right. I know. I think I just like somewhere in some video or something, they're like, well, when the first episode started out with this classic Who villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were. It's really interesting. I was thinking about this before, about how they really slowly and I think cleverly introduced the classic Who lore. And I hope they'll do the similar thing in New Who. I think having the faces of the Doctor here without an explanation is a good way to do that.
Right.
Good way to start that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was a nice, like, people who don't know yet are like, oh, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, we got some more references because there were some, you know, darker elements to this episode where, for instance, we see the Doctor, he refers to Gallifrey being gone, of course, but he also says to Rogue, I can't let you kill them, about the Childer. And then mm-hmm. after he thinks that they've killed Ruby, it's I want them to suffer for centuries.
Yeah.
And at the end, he says, or he says to Rogue about this, I have to be like this because this is what I'm like. About, oh yeah, no, that was at the end when Ruby says to him, when Ruby's like, they don't know how to rescue Rogue, and it seems like he was about to give up a little too easily.
And yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the Doctor was gonna do. I see. What I thought was that Rogue was gonna grab the transport.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was gonna grab the trigger and just send them away, and that would have been an interesting thing because the Doctor is really into Rogue and trolley problem. That's the right thing to do, but the Doctor didn't even consider pushing somebody else in because that would be awful to do if Rogue didn't do it himself, to himself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anyway, except
they could have totally done that with the Emily Childer, but anyway.
Well, you know, who knows? Who knows the rules?
But so he says, yeah, Rogue did say to him, can you lose your friend to save the world? And I guess he was talking about himself rather than Ruby. Or he looked at the Doctor and said, no, you need her more than you need me.
Hmm. Yeah. Maybe he knew, like, she could help him find Rogue more than Rogue could help him.
Hmm.
Find Ruby. But I don't know how he would know that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that ring's got to lead somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess we'll be seeing the Childer again, too.
Yeah, probably. Do you think we'll see Rogue in the season one finale, or do you think not until season two?
Ooh. I think season two. I don't think this is a season one arc.
There's been some people online wondering if Rogue could be the one who waits, but I hope not, honestly. I don't want Rogue to be a villain.
Yeah, no, I don't want Rogue to be a villain either. I think we deserve another Jack Harkness. Come on.
Right.
You deserve it. And, you know, all the things about John Barrowman, he's got some problems in his past. Maybe we don't want to reopen that. And also, you have the weird thing where he's aging more quickly than his character is supposed to age.
Right. Right. Because he's human.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could just say he's farther along towards the face of Bo.
Yeah, because it could be from way back, way later in his.
Yeah, like, oh, this is 3,000 years in the future, right? Like mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if RTD wants to bring back John after all of those issues.
Yeah.
Who knows? No,
I think the scandal is enough to keep him away.
I would rather Jonathan Groff than John Barrowman at this point. Like, This was better chemistry than John Barrowman ever had with
Well, I mean, if it's going to you're going to have chemistry with a young actor playing a young doctor, you know, an old doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor's always old, but it's a young actor. Give him another young actor to play off. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan Groff is great. And there's no way that they're not going to make more use of him because, he's a fantastic actor.
Let me ask you before we wrap up our thoughts. Do you know this quote about the doctor shifting past that was part of a novel?
Mm?
This is being passed around right now because of all these, like, you know, the Schalke doctor and things like that. So this is something that this, like, memory traitor says to the Eighth Doctor in a novel from 1999, I think it was. It says, maybe you didn't used to have a father. Maybe you're living in the middle of a time war. Maybe there's an enemy out there who's rewriting you when you're not looking. Maybe you weren't always half human, but now you become always half human. Maybe you weren't always a Time Lord, but now you've always been a Time Lord. Maybe you originally came from some planet in the 49th century, fleeing from the enemy who'd overrun your home, and you've just been ridden and rewritten and overridden ever since.
Hmm.
And people are passing that around like, look, the doctor's history can change.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Good point.
People are saying, are they going to say that, like, the timeless child is a rewriting of his history, right? Like, he wasn't always a timeless child.
Right.
Or maybe the master will become the timeless child. Who knows?
Well, if Susan Twist is a storyteller, then yeah, maybe the storyteller's been reshaping things.
Right, right. I think it would be super interesting to hear, like, somebody's messing with the doctor's past.
Right.
I mean, we have that in the time of the doctor, but, you know, in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Well, I'm excited for next week. We get The Legend of Ruby Sunday, and the trailer is full of Susan Twist, so definitely answers incoming.
It better be. Better be. We've got two episodes left.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe it. And it's kind of like a two-parter, apparently.
I wish they did them on the same night, though.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be torturous if there's a cliffhanger.
And there will be.
Of course there will be. Otherwise, why would it be a two-parter?
All right. Shall we get to feedback?
Yeah, let's do that.
Of course, you can write in feedback at tardis@thelorehounds.com. You can also go to thelorehounds.com and head to our contact page. Or you can tag us on Discord and say, hey, John, Alicia, I want this to be read on the podcast, and we'll do it. Marilyn Arpakila, our favorite Tolkien scholar, writes in. I love that we've made Marilyn a Whovian, by the way. she's in every week. She was just messaging me about it, like, the other day. Marilyn says, Marilyn says, hello, John and Alicia. I absolutely adored this one, and I'm really, really glad that Bob and I started watching Bridgerton before I saw it. I tend to like the Earth Historical Doctor episodes the most, as a rule. I'm thinking particularly of the Dickens episode. Of course, that makes sense since I am a historian by training. I do wonder why no one notices all the flashing lights during the Childer takeovers. To me, it seems to me to be a fairly obvious signal that something odd is going on. I do like the way they conceived of the creatures. At first, I was thinking more cat-like than bird-like, but in the end, they're really rather like both, aren't they? Nice mannerisms with the occasional shudder and bones/joints clicking too. Favorite quotes, the name is Bond, molecular Bond. And we have to live each day because they can't. How to go on after the loss of a loved one. That is a great quote. I thought the visual of his reveal as a Time Lord with all the previous incarnations was spectacular, very creative. And the image of the Doctor and the Rogue dancing together was just delicious. The acting on both parts was superb. Yeah, I want to comment on that quickly. I love when he's like, just the Doctor. He goes, just Rogue. I mean, we're obviously all using code names here. Like, get off your high horse.
Yeah, that was funny. And I have a request. If anyone's a fan also of Interview with the Vampire, I need somebody to cut together. There's a scene from season one of Interview with the Vampire with Louis and Lestat dancing. You'll know which one. Cut it together with this one, please.
Fair enough. But the reveal of their impetus for what they do was pure delight. Cosplaying aliens. no other purpose than the emotional highs, no hunger, no world domination, no greed, no envy. Mind you, I'm not saying that they're nice creatures at all, but it was a very funny send-up for cosplaying. I can just imagine people weaving this into their future cosplay. How about a Star Trek uniform with a shoulder head? I would not be in the least surprised if Rogue's Ring turns out to be a link for the Doctor to find him again. And it also looks like we're getting some Susan answers on the next episode. It's about time. As David would say, no notes. All the best, Marilyn.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I think there was a P.S. that I forgot to copy in.
There's a P.S.? Mm-hmm. Well, we need a Marilyn P.S. I love the Marilyn P.S.s.
She says, P.S. P.S. Love that Rogue and the Doctor dance the tango anachronistically.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
I love when they do something out of nowhere and nobody blinks an eye. I think that's really right. Funny. It reminds me of, well, maybe Back to the Future. Well, maybe your kids are going to love it, right?
Right, exactly. It may not be for you, but your kids are going to love it.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap this whole show up, Alicia. What are you doing over on Star Wars? I think I know, but maybe you should tell everybody.
Yes, well, you should know because you are there. So we're doing weekly coverage of The Acolyte right now, and also going to do some mailbag episodes in the meantime. So if you have any feedback about the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast coverage of the first three ages or eras, or any thoughts on those eras themselves, please send that in, or anything else, to swtimelinepodcast@gmail.com. And on We'll Shift Dust, we finished off the end of Beacon 23 Season 2, and next up will be my interview with co-showrunner Glenn Matsara. That interview has been pushed till next week, so the episode will be out after that.
Cool. Very cool. Aaron from Radioactive Ramblings, he just sent me what they're doing for the week. It is Fallout Lore Episode 4 on The Master and All Knowing's Lore Corner. I don't know what that means. Timeline of the Lands Between. That sounds very interesting. I just don't know what it is. Over on the Lore Hounds, we're still doing House of the Dragon. We just put out our episode covering the end of Season 1 last week. And then we did a Season 2 preview with Maester Anthony. He had us do Yuck, Yum, or Meh for each of the characters, and that was a lot of fun. And of course, you're on Doctor Who, so you know we're still doing that through the end of the season.
And we're also going to do a one-shot for Interview with the Vampire. So if anyone's watching, please do send in your feedback about that show and join us on the Discord to chat about it.
Very nice. And we've got two other affiliates, Rings and Rituals, doing The Eye, Episode 7 of The Rings of Power this week. Marilyn Arbuckle, our favorite Tolkien scholar, who you heard from today, is hosting with Dr. Sarah Brown of Signum University to analyze Season 1 of The Rings of Power through the lens of ritual. And Properly Howard Movie Review is still going. Didn't they just do My Cousin Vinny?
Yeah, I actually just listened to that episode, yeah.
That's funny. I gotta listen to that one. I haven't had a chance yet, but they're always so funny.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone, this has been a lovely journey through time and space with you all. Let's do our thank yous. Alicia, hit me with a list.
All right, thank you to our Discord server boosters: Gnarls, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doove 71, Captain Gingy 56, and Athena Angelea. And our lore masters: Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doove 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwong Yu, Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, and Adrian. Always last.
All right. We're having fun here. We're finishing up Doctor Who, and we'll see you next week. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a five-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at rinse.com. That's R-I-N-S-E.com.